Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. AGLCA and our Admiral sponsors, Dog River Marina and Boat Works, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guide and Magazine, Green Turtle Bay Resort, Marina Life, Richardson's MapTech, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, and Skipper Bob Publications invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you whether you're dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our ship store at www.greatloop.org, ship store. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Okay, everyone, we're just about ready to get started. As usual, we have the home port crew, Beth, Steve, and I'm not sure if Janine's with us this morning. Oh, I see she just came in, so that's great.
I'm here.
Hi, Janine, morning. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for the introduction, Beth. Okay,
for
people out there who aren't familiar with the Great Loop, there is actually a continuous waterway around the eastern portion of North America. Our association was formed several years ago in 1999 to link not only the Great Loop, but the people who are interested in planning, doing, dreaming of, or have completed it. Again, our webpage is www.greatloop.org. We'd love for you to visit all of the free information we have on the toolbar on the left and also become a member. We're very excited to introduce our guest host this week, Chuck Baer. Chuck was formerly the general manager of Waterway Guide and is now the Gulf Coast representative of our very, very valued Admiral sponsor, Marina Life. Chuck also writes a column for them and is active in the whole program. Chuck is going to be telling us some information about cruising to and what you need to know while in the Bahamas. As usual, you can call in with questions or comments. We encourage them. Chuck, be ready for some good questions. The call-in number is 877-497-1815. Okay, Chuck, why don't you get started with how do we prepare for our trip to the Bahamas?
Well, good morning, Janice, and thanks for having me on the blog radio once again. We've made several trips over to the Bahamas, and a lot of folks in preparation spend a lot of time being concerned with getting the boat provisioned and making sure you have all the supplies and so forth. But I think that's one of the most important areas in the preparation is having the boat itself prepared and then also having the crew prepared because that is a open water passage. You're out of sight of land. You're crossing essentially an ocean. And it's very important that the boat itself is prepared for that kind of a crossing. The common sense things like knowing that we have all of the usual safety equipment on board, but good communication equipment is essential also. We have to remember that, because you'll be out of sight of land, there's often going to be times when you're also out of range for a VHF radio or for a cell phone or that type of thing. So some type of communication in order to be able to make a call, distress call, is necessary. We carry HF radio, single sideband hand radio. And the other thing that I highly recommend for anybody making that passage is to carry an EPIRB that is currently registered with your name and a vessel's name and all that type of thing. The next order of importance is preparing the crew and keeping in mind that especially folks that are making the crossing on the first time, that the Atlantic swells are a whole lot different than cruising down the intercoastal waterway. And we've seen a lot of people that have done the ICW over and over and over again, never had any issues, and then got about a third or a fourth of the way out to the Bahamas and found out that the entire crew was almost debilitated from seasickness. So those are the kind of things that you have to prepare for, in addition to getting the boat provisioned and all that stuff. And provisioning is also important. We found that there are certain things that we buy and stock up on for just about the entire trip here in the U.S., because it's either extremely expensive in the Bahamas or it's hard to come by. And one of those things is toilet paper. It's amazing how expensive toilet paper and most paper goods, things like paper towels and things like that, are how expensive they are over in the Bahamas. So those are the kind of things that we stock up on. Over-the-counter medications, we make sure that we have plenty of those because they're very expensive and hard to come by. We also make sure that if we have to have any type of special medication or prescriptions or anything like that, that we get those filled in the U.S. before we leave. But there are some things that are cheaper over in the Bahamas because of government subsidy. We never eat lamb in the United States. It's expensive, and we're not big lamb fans. But when we go over to the Bahamas, we eat it all the time because it's really, really inexpensive because of the government subsidy. And things like butter and cheese and things like that are always less expensive over in the Bahamas also.
Jack, how long do you typically stay when you go to the Bahamas?
Well, we generally go over in the wintertime like everybody else, and we get over there, try to get over right after the 1st of January because typically we're like everyone else. We like to spend holidays with family, with the kids and the grandkids and so forth. And then we will start heading back, probably the latest we start heading back is the first part of May, work our way back to the U.S., and, you know, we try to be back in the U.S. coast somewhere in Florida, middle part of May.
Uh-huh. So when you have to prepare to bring supplies, you really need basically 3 months' worth at least.
I would think so. Otherwise, plan on doing some provisioning stops in some of the larger ports. Georgetown, for instance, in the Exumas, you can get pretty much everything you need, but a lot of other areas you can't. So that means trips to Nassau, or Freeport, or some of the larger cities, and that also means a very expensive provisioning stop if you have to do that.
Chuck?
Yes.
How many miles is it from the U.S. to the Bahamas?
It depends on where you're crossing from and where you want to cross to. For instance, if you go from Lake Worth to West End, that is about 56 miles. The shortest distance is probably from around Government Cut in Miami to Cat Key, and that's about 44 miles. Actually, I think Cat Key and Bimini are within a couple of miles of each other being the same distance, and they're the shortest route between the Bahamas and the U.S. coast.
So basically, for a slow trawler, you can plan on a good day.
Yes, and we typically try to leave. There's a couple of things you need to know in heading over there. One is, of course, we all know about the Gulf Stream. And because the Gulf Stream is flowing northward, and it can run at anywhere from 2.5 to up to 4 knots, you know, that has to be factored into your crossing so that you can actually, depending on where you leave, you can actually cover a longer distance than maybe some of the more shorter distances. For instance, going from Miami or Fort Lauderdale, if you're trying to go to Bimini or Cat, you're actually going south into the stream, and you don't want to do that. So that means you've got to go way south of your destination and then let the stream carry you up. So you're actually covering more miles, and it's taking you longer to get there. For instance, if you wanted to go to West End, you leave Lake Worth, and you're going just a little south of your destination. It's only 56 miles, but you have to fight the stream. You have to compensate for that northern flowing stream. If you left from, say, Pompano Beach area, somewhere around there, it's about 65 miles, and it actually takes you less time because you're heading north and letting the stream carry you north. I mean, yeah, you're letting the stream carry you north. It actually takes less time to cover that 64 miles than it does to cover the 56 miles from Lake Worth.
Oh, that's interesting. And, of course, during the winter, you're fighting very short daylight.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And we typically will leave, we like to leave from Key Biscayne. That's kind of our favorite jump-off point, although we have covered, you know, just about every place that you can leave from along the coast of Florida. But we like to leave maybe an hour or two before daylight. And, you know, depending on the speed of your boat, ideally you want to hit the Bahama banks just after noon with the sun at your back, because it's kind of unnerving when you're out there and your depth sounder is off soundings and you're not reading anything, and then all of a sudden you look down and it says 10 feet of water. So when you hit that shallow Bahama bank, it's a little, as I said, it's a little unnerving. But it's much better if the sun is at your back, and early afternoon is the best time to make that landing on the banks.
Uh-huh. Steve, where were we coming out of one time? It was horrible. It was first thing in the morning, and the day before it was basically at sunset, and there were crab pots all over the place, and we just literally couldn't see. I think it was on our trip up north, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was someplace on the Potomac. I don't remember exactly where it was.
Uh-huh. I remember that sun can be brutal.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. If you get there too early, the sun is in your face. And a lot of the navigation process going through the Bahamas is just being able to read the bottom. And just by looking at the water, you can kind of tell what kind of depths you have. But if that sun is in your face, all you see is the glare of the sun.
Mm-hmm. What kind of weather do you look for to cross?
Bright, sunny, and no wind. You know, a lot of folks say, okay, well, what is your advice for crossing to the Bahamas? And I tell everybody I have three words of advice for making the crossing. That's wait, wait, and wait. Because most people that get either impatient or they get to the point where they have a schedule that they have to keep, that's the time that the boat and the crew generally get into trouble. Bruce Van Sant is a friend of ours, and he gave us a piece of advice that we have followed for years and kind of kept us out of trouble. And that is that when the weather forecast is the same for today, tonight, and tomorrow, then it's probably a good time for crossing. And that, what that means is that the wind conditions and direction and the sea state is forecast exactly the same for today, tonight, and tomorrow, then you're probably good. And if you're crossing and you've been sitting waiting for 3-4 days, we sat for 10 days and waited for a weather window. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the wind howled, and the Gulf Stream was 8-10 feet, and then all of a sudden the wind lays down flat. Well, a lot of people attempted just to fire up the engines and take off. And that's not a good idea either. You really need to give that Gulf Stream about 24 hours to lay down. So you're looking for almost a 72 hours of fairly calm, benign conditions before you make that crossing, and there's a reason for that. Because it'll take you all day to get across, depending on the speed of your boat. Once you get there, you have to get somewhere. Now, if you cross over to West End, there's a marina there. If you cross over to Cat Key, there's a marina there also. But they're very expensive. And if you only have that one weather window for that one day and you get trapped in that marina, you could be trapped there for a week, paying very expensive dock fees. So you really want to give yourself enough time to make the crossing and then get across the banks to your next destination, preferably where you're going to clear in. Then you can kind of slow down and relax if you want. And you have a lot of options, whether it's anchoring or marinas or whatever. But it can be just as vicious crossing those banks as it can be crossing the Gulf Stream under the wrong conditions. We had a weather window slam shut on us halfway across the banks, and in 20 years of cruising and tens of thousands of miles, that was the closest we ever came to losing the boat.
Really? It's got to be really frightening. You know, Chuck, I'm just thinking, you know, in our discussion forum, Tom Conrad posts every day on weather conditions to cross the Gulf. Is there any resource to help people make the decision of when it's right to cross to the Bahamas?
Well, there are actually lots and lots of resources. When you're in most of the coastal areas in Florida, the VHF radio, of course, is constantly broadcasting the weather forecast. And, you know, I've had my issues with those broadcasts in the past, but, again, it's not so much the specifics as looking for the trends. And if the trend is light seas, light winds, from certain directions over a period of time, then, you know, it's good. Now, there are many, many, many resources online to get additional information. You can go to the National Weather Service and the NOAA website. You can pull up weather facts information that will give you wind and wave weather facts. You can get text broadcasts over HF radio. You can pull up those same text broadcasts on the NOAA and the National Weather Service. You can also get charts that show you the location of the Gulf Stream and where the strongest currents are and what the speed of the current at the Gulf Stream access is. So there's a lot of different places. And there are weather routers. Chris Parker, for instance, has a paid weather service that he will, in the morning and afternoon, he's on the HF radio, and he will give you a forecast for your trip, and he will send you an email every day for a forecast based on where you're going and when. Now, that's a paid service. There are free services that you can receive over HF radio, like Herb Hilgenberg. We used Herb for years and years and years. He's up in Canada on Southbound, too. He's essentially a weather router, and he gets on there every day and tells you what you can expect for the next 24 to 48 hours and whether you should sit tight or go. So there are tons and tons of resources. But one thing that I do suggest, and folks that are going to be doing this on a regular basis, is that you get a basic knowledge of just what you feel you need to know on meteorology. And when you collect those weather facts and weather charts and the text information, you'll be able to sit down and kind of review all of that and almost make your own decision as to what kind of weather you can expect in the next couple of days.
Well, thank you. I think we're going to take a short break. We've got a message from Admiral sponsor Dog River Marina, and then we will pick up with how to clear into the Bahamas. Let's listen to our great sponsor, Dog River.
AGLCA Admiral-sponsored Dog River Marina is located at the mouth of the Tenton Waterway in Mobile, Alabama, only 22 miles from the Gulf of Mexico. The marina encompasses 95 slips, 80 of which are sheltered. They offer a ship store, courtesy car, rental cars, 24-hour guard service, and shore power. The complex's full-service repair facility is staffed with highly trained personnel to handle everything from simple repairs to complex overhauls. For more information, visit www.dogriver.com.
Okay, Chuck, how about telling us how to clear into the Bahamas? Is it difficult? Is it stressful?
Well, no, it's actually very easy. And we found that the Bahamian government is fairly lax and flexible on check-ins. We've always said their main concern was collecting that fee. Anything beyond that, they're not really concerned with. But there are some things that you need to know to do it right. And there are the laws in the Bahamas, and then there are the way they do things in the Bahamas. According to Bahamian law, a boat has to clear in at the nearest designated port of entry. That means that if you enter at West End, by law, you have to clear in at West End. If you come in through Cat and Gun Key, by law, you clear in at Cat and Gun. Now, the reality is that a lot of folks don't use West End or Cat because of the expensive marina that you have to stay at that will add to your entry fees. So they bypass those. Technically, by law, you're breaking the law. The reality is Bahamians don't really care.
sounds very laid back.
And it really is. You need to get to your first most convenient port of entry. When you come into the Bahamas, they prefer that you fly the yellow Q flag until you have notified customs that you've arrived. And the last couple of years, there have been some issues about the time frames that have been given to folks coming into the Bahamas. By law, they give you 30 days on your cruising permit. But they have been known to give us up to 120 days on that cruising permit. And a lot of it depends on where you check in and who the customs and immigration officials are and so forth. Now, a couple of things that are important to know is if you check into a port of entry that only has customs and has no immigration, he's only authorized to give you 30 days. He really doesn't have a choice. They might do it, but most of the time not. So you want to make sure that you're checking into a port of entry that has both customs and immigration. Then they generally will give you 90 days, sometimes 120 days. Now, you can, of course, extend that once your time is up, but it's kind of a hassle because you have to go to someplace like Nassau. You can only do that a couple of days before your cruising permit expires, so it's like you can't, you know, you can't do it in the out islands and you can't do it a week ahead of time and that thing. But you can extend it. It's fairly easy and it's free. Now, the fees are if your vessel is 35 feet, or smaller, it's $150. And that is valid for two entries into the Bahamas during a 90-day period. If your boat is over 35 feet, then the fee is $300. And it's really a matter of going into port, going into customs and immigration, filling out the proper paperwork, and paying them in cash. They don't take checks. And I've not found any yet that will accept credit cards either. Now, the entry fee includes a couple of things. It includes your cruising permit. It includes a fishing permit, all of your customs and immigration charges, and there's a $15 per person departure tax for each person on board. That covers up to four people. If you have more than four people on board, then each additional person is charged an extra $15. And those are basically the fees, and that's pretty much it. Once you clear in, you know, you're free to move about the Bahamas, go anywhere you want to go. When the permit expires, you either have to be out of the country or go in for renewal.
Okay. Once we're in the Bahamas, how easy is it to stay in touch with business, home, friends, cell phone coverage, internet service? What can we expect?
Well, it's a lot easier than it used to be, although it's not as easy as being in the United States. We went over one year with a newfangled invention that we had found on the internet that you could hold up to a telephone, like a payphone, push a button, and it would send and receive emails. And, I mean, we thought this was the wildest thing in the world. Today, you can use a cell phone over in the Bahamas. You can get internet access. But as I said, it's not as easy as it is in the United States. Now, Bahamas Telephone Company has a monopoly on these things over there. We used to know them as the Telco. They just changed their name now, so they want to be known now as BTC. And if you want phone communications or even data over a smartphone, you'll need to take an unlocked GSM phone with you when you go over there. Or you can buy one when you get over there for most of the BTC phone sets. Now, why I say it's unlocked is because when you get a phone from AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile or one of those, they generally lock that phone to their system. So if you try to use any other provider, it doesn't work. With the Bahamas, you need to make sure it's an unlocked phone. It's quad band, which means it has at least four bands. Now, that sounds like a lot, but you can buy these phones really cheaply at Kmart or on eBay. We have one that we've been carrying around with us for, I don't know, 10 or 15 years now. Because once you get over there, what you have to do is go to a BTC office or one of their authorized providers and buy a SIM card that fits into that phone. You take the old SIM card that was in the phone out, you put the BTC SIM card in there, and they activate it. Once it's activated, you essentially have a Bahamas telephone with a Bahamas phone number. So you can make and receive calls in the Bahamas. You can call back to the U.S., and it's a whole lot cheaper than trying to use U.S. phones. Now, with U.S. phones, you have to be careful. Some of the phone providers, like Verizon, for instance, will tell you, oh, yeah, our phone works over in the Bahamas. Well, it only works in places like Nassau, Freeport, things like that. And the costs to call the U.S. are astronomical. So by using an unlocked GSM phone with a BTC SIM card, you save yourself a ton of money. You can make phone calls. You can buy a data plan. I think that the BTC data plan for the smartphone is about $40 a month.
How much is the SIM card, Chuck? Do you know?
The SIM cards, it depends, because when you buy the SIM card, you can buy the SIM card, and at the same time, you buy minutes for it, and you can load minutes into it anytime you want. But generally, you can expect when you buy the SIM card initially and put the first minutes in it, and I think they require, like, the total cost is about $40 to $60.
Oh, that's not bad.
On what plan you buy. And their data plan, the BTC data plan for the smartphones, is about $40 a month.
Okay, great.
Now,
so that's
also
one problem that's easily solved.
Right. And you can also get Internet access. Now, we have a Wi-Fi adapter that is mounted to an antenna on the outside of the boat that will let us pick up Wi-Fi signals as far as 3 or 4 miles away from the boat. And in using that with our computer, if there is free Wi-Fi available from a hotel, a cafe, marina, or anything like that, we're able to access that Wi-Fi service on the boat via our adapter. But there are also paid services throughout the Bahamas, places like Marsh Harbor and Georgetown and Nassau and a lot of those, where you can pick up over-the-air Wi-Fi service, and you can pay by the day, or you can buy a week's worth, or you can buy a month's worth, or you can buy it for the whole season. That will allow you to pick up Wi-Fi over your laptop. Now, there are going to be a lot of places, especially for those of us that like to spend time in the Exumas, there are going to be a lot of places throughout the Exumas that we're not going to have service, because you have to remember that you're going to have to be within a sight of the cell towers. In the Exumas, for instance, there's a cell tower at Hyburn, there's one at Staniel, there's one at Black Point, there's one at Farmers, and there's one on Great Exuma Key. But outside of those areas, you're probably not going to get any Wi-Fi. You're probably not going to get any phone service. The major cities, Nassau, Freeport, Grand Bahamas, all through there, they're all going to have both Wi-Fi and cell phone service.
Well, that sounds really interesting. I want to go. I'm ready, Steve.
Okay.
Okay, Chuck, that's been extremely informative and interesting. I thank you very, very much. Again, our shows are archived at www.greatloop.org. You can go to Blog Talk Radio to listen, and they're also available through iTunes. If you'd like to become a member, just sign up at our webpage or call me. The number is 877-478-5667. Extension 5040. And that's it for this week. Everyone have a wonderful weekend, and we'll be back again next Friday.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you, Janice. Bye, everybody.
Thank you, Chuck. Bye.